Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is the Fredericksburg Free Press this morning, and why we haven't done a Fredericksburg Free Press show, I do not know. And this is all on me, and I apologize, Joey. Joey from the Free Press.
I don't accept your apology. I'm not joking.
You shouldn't. You and I have talked about this for a long time, and it is good to have you here, Joey.
LaMonaco.
It's LaMonaco.
LaMonaco is here, the managing editor of the Free Press, along with Mitzi Brown, who's on the board of the Free Press. Good to have you both here this morning to do something like this. Thank you.
No, thanks for having us, Ted.
For people who don't know, Joey, the Free Press, talk about it.
So, yeah, it is a nonprofit. We're a nonprofit news outlet that covers the Fredericksburg region. So, specifically, there are five localities, counties, and one city that comprise what is referred to as Planning District 16. So, the four counties, you have Stafford County, Spotsylvania County, King George County, and Caroline County, and then you have the city of Fredericksburg. So, we are a nonprofit news source that strives to cover all of those counties. We launched officially in February of 2024, so we have been publishing for a little more than 2 years now, which is crazy to say, Mitzi.
Crazy.
And, you know, it's kind of unique in the sense that it is not, you know, it wasn't founded by journalists. It was, you know, and this is where I'm going to kick it over to you. You know, a board kind of came together, a group of community members kind of came together and saw this need, saw this sort of information desert or void or, you know, just need, if you will, and decided to do something about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good kickoff to it. So back in, I don't know, January, maybe December timeframe, a year before that in 2023, a bunch of people got fired from the Freelance Star, and it was clear that this wasn't going well. And
I can remember the day. It was a Friday afternoon. You called me
and
said, what are we going to do? I said, well, you ought to talk to so-and-so, and sent you to Chris Muldrow's
wife. Right, that's right. And it was, what the hell are we going to do? Here we live in a, you know, $400,000 people population area, and it's become a news desert. And this isn't healthy. It's not good for the community. It's not good. And people are relying on misinformation for their information. And this is just not healthy. So I sat around for a while, talked to a lot of people, and thought, God, do I really want to take this on? And then my daughter said, yeah, of course you're going to do it. So then at Seth Silver's birthday party, I cornered him in the kitchen and I said, I have an idea. We had coffee a couple days later. He said, I'm in. And then we grabbed Chris Muldrow and had dinner with him and he said, I'm in. And then the three of us kind of formed the founding group that then went out and recruited a really, really terrific board of directors. And it was intentional for the three of us. I'm kind of an organizational, I know how to build an organization. Mm-hmm. Chris knows journalism. And Seth knows how to raise money. So those were our three lanes. And we built a board from that and then decided then and there that the one thing that journalists didn't have anymore was a sense of where their next paycheck was going to come from, job security. And so we decided we would take a year to build the infrastructure,
I can vouch for that sense.
So we decided we would not open the doors until we knew we could support them for 3 years. And so we raised the funds, we built the organization, got our 501c3, wrote our bylaws, did all that, and took a year to do it, which is exactly what it took. The corporation was formed, and then a year later, we launched. And that's how it all started.
And 2 years into it.
And now two years since the launch.
We'll get into all of that as we go along. One of the things, you've got a fundraiser coming up.
I do.
Which is something that the community can get involved with.
Yeah, because we've intentionally, instead of in I have found in the Fredericksburg region that there are some amazing nonprofit organizations. I mean, really, really workhorse stuff. And I've lived in D.C. and Philly. I've never seen a place with such great nonprofits. But the problem is we're all competing for the same high dollars. And we decided that this year we're going to do something a little different and do more, you know, events that are friendlier to people, to everybody, right? So on March 19th, we're doing a comedy show, and it is being headlined by Rami Mostafavi. And if you don't know who he is, he got his start here in the Fredericksburg area.
He's got ties here.
Oh, yeah. He was selling out places in Fredericksburg, and then now he's gone national. And he sells out places all over the country. He is a very, very funny guy. Irreverent. Sometimes rude, but he's a comedian, and he's absolutely hilarious. And he offered to do this for us because he believes in what we're doing. So he's doing this for us on March 19th at the Griffin on Charles, which is 911 Charles Street behind Castilla's. And the tickets are selling fast. We're almost out. So get your ticket. Go to FredericksonFreePress.com. They're $50. It includes a drink, snacks, dessert, a bunch of stuff, swag, all kinds of fun stuff.
We were just talking like a minute ago, we wanted it to be, you know, that price point to be accessible, right? You know, fundraisers are typically, you know, high dollar events, right?
Right.
You know, $100 dinner, whatever. This is Fredericksburg, right? Like we want,
different,
you know, if you want to go see a good comedian and you want to support the Free Press, we wanted you to be able to do it. So, you know, that was very intentional and sort of like where we came in with like, hey, this is a $50 ticket. Like, have a good night.
Have a good night.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all of those things plus a show for $50 is actually a decent price. And so, you know, we're not making a ton of money off of this, but it's a fundraiser.
Again, on FredericksburgFreePress.com for tickets.
FredericksburgFreePress.com. You'll see the graphic there. Just punch on it, and you can get your tickets.
And you're helping a great cause.
Yeah. We believe we are.
And we'll get into what's going on with the Free Press. If you haven't checked it out, it's free news, local news. FredericksburgFreePress.com. Mitzi Brown is here. Joey LaMonaco is here. The Fredericksburg Free Press, our focus. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFE.
My mom has decided to learn to paint, and she's good.
My dad's now into creative cuisine, and I've already put on 6 pounds.
Learning new things comes with age.
My mom, she started forgetting my name and what we're talking about.
Forgetting well-known things doesn't. Memory loss may be a sign of Alzheimer's disease. Early detection gives you and your loved one time to plan for the future. Learn the warning signs of Alzheimer's at 10signs.org. Brought to you by the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Joey LaMonaco and Mitzi Brown here this morning. The Fredericksburg Free Press is what we are talking about. And again, why it has taken so long to talk about the Free Press and have you guys in is we won't make that mistake. We'll pick up the baton and move forward. One of the things, Mitzi, that we should probably talk a little bit about is it's a little bit different that the Free Press is nonprofit, a 501c3.
That's right. And I think the significance about that is that 90-something% of every dollar goes straight to the newsroom. Nobody else is getting a salary. Nobody else is. There are no shareholders. There's no. All the money that comes in the door goes straight to creating news that is free for the public.
We don't even have an executive director.
An executive director, right? It's 90%, and the rest of it are things like insurance, which is boring money, but. That is not something you get from when there's a profit center.
Right.
And so there are lots of things we can do. We've become a paper of record. We can do that far cheaper than the Freelance Star because it's not a profit center for us. It's a public service. And so that saves taxpayer dollars. I mean, there's lots and lots of things that we can do because making a profit is not the goal.
Well, and from a journalism standpoint, you know, that was probably the biggest pivot for me personally as a journalist, and I think for really the entire newsroom team, So coming from, you know, and I'm using air quotes here, you can't see it on the air, but coming from so-called legacy news, you know, mm-hmm. newspapers, print journalism, you know, the goal is to get the story, to tell the story. With nonprofit journalism, nonprofit news, there's this whole aspect of the mission. And you know, a mission is something that is, you know, really emblematic of, you know, the nonprofit world in general. But with news, there's this whole idea of, you know, serving the public, in a way that transcends simply, you know, telling a story, reporting a story. So that for me, once I was starting to get enmeshed in like the industry itself of nonprofit news, and we would do things like, you know, like last fall we did candidate forums where it's literally about providing it's public service journalism, mm-hmm. right? You know, putting candidates in front of people, streaming it, exposing as many people to, you know, the people that will represent them. That sort of project, I think, is really specific to like what nonprofit news strives to do. So that's been really mm-hmm. cool for me to sort of broaden, you know, broaden my perspective as a journalist about what it's all about.
And being able to supply the news to everybody who needs it for free. I mean, that is, I think, no matter what, it's accessible to absolutely everyone. And that, I think, is the chief among the most important things that we do.
And that sets it apart, too, because of the paywall has now become with everybody. And even a lot of the local.
And there never will be.
Even a lot of some of the regional news sources. There's a paywall aspect, and there isn't to the free press.
Right, and everyone's been trying to, really since the advent of the internet, everyone's been trying to figure out revenue, right?
Right.
And they haven't really succeeded. You know, people have tried everything from metered paywalls, you know, where readers get a certain amount of, you know, stories they can view a month until they're blocked and have to sign in and pay, to just a full paywall where you have to be a subscriber. Nonprofit is another attempt at solving the model. Mm-hmm. And it's a really promising one, if you ask me, because it reframes how you view news. It reframes it as like a public utility or a public good. Hmm. You know, obviously, you know, it's subject to, you know, the business forces, economic forces. But when you start viewing it like something that the public deserves in an area, in a market, it makes it something worthy of support. So, I mean, I think it's our best hope yet at solving how to, you know, make news resilient and make it, you know, sustainable.
One of the other benefits too is the separation of money from the news. So they have the newsroom raising money is board responsibility, and believe me, we're working hard, but it has nothing to do with the newsroom. Everybody that funds us in any major way signs a contract saying they know flat out that there's no interference, that they have this money, there's no pay to play, there's no mm-hmm. We don't take advertising, we take sponsorships like any other nonprofit. And there is this firewall between money and the newsroom, which you can only do with a nonprofit.
Well, and it's about transparency too. So when we publish a story that, you know, features a major donor, say, I'll give you the example of Mary Washington Healthcare, mm-hmm. Which is a donor to the Free Press, or any other donor above a certain threshold. I believe it's $5,000 is probably where we include a disclaimer in those stories saying, hey, so-and-so who's featured in the story is a sponsor of the Free Press, is a major donor to the Free Press. Sponsors do not influence the newsroom operations.
Right, absolutely
but
not.
It's putting it out there like, hey, you know, we are getting money from these people. It's about transparency.
So you know.
And we have a whole page on our website, and I think this is really important too, that discloses our money. All you got to do is click on where your fund, you know, our funding. It's right there. And you get the whole list of everybody, how much they gave. So I think transparency is key too. And you don't get that. I mean, that's part of the nonprofit ethos, I think.
Ethos, that's a wonderful word.
So Joey, a little bit about your background. I've known you since your days at the Freelance Star.
Yeah.
But a little bit about your background.
So yeah, I'm a Nova kid, or like a Nova junior kid. I grew up in Woodridge, you know, it's like on the periphery of Nova. I attended the University of Mary Washington, and that's where I kind of got my start in sports journalism. I was kind of a former athlete, a baseball player, and wanted to stay, you know, close to sports, I guess. So I started, you know, freelancing for any publication that would have me, newspapers, you know, websites, whatever, just, you know, driving 30, 40 miles to cover a game for $75, you know, mm-hmm. like on a weeknight. So I, you know, started building up my portfolio, as a sports writer, graduated from, UMW in 2013. I have a degree in creative writing, and fiction writing, is my, concentration. And then, I started sort of a series of different journalism jobs. The best one was, the Washington Post hired me as a part-time sports writer and kind of like a news assistant. And that was fascinating. So you can imagine my emotions when the Post shuttered its sports department.
Yeah.
It was tough. A lot of people that I really respected and a lot of, you know, people I call friends that I'm lucky to call friends lost their jobs. But that was a really formative couple of years for me at the Post, you know, steel sharpened steel. And, you know, just being there with some of the best sports writing mm-hmm. minds in the business really helped me, you know, hone my craft and learn a lot. From there, I went to Morgantown, where my now wife was getting her master's degree at West Virginia University. And I covered, I got a job at the paper out there, the Morgantown Dominion Post. I covered WVU football and Big 12 football. So that was really fun getting to fly all over the country to such, you know, exotic places like Oklahoma and Kansas. Did that for a couple of years. And then when she finished her her graduate program, you know, kind of wanted to move back to where we have family. And that's when there was an opening at the Freelance Star that I jumped on. And I loved my time at the Freelance Star. You know, it was obviously a husk of what it used to be as like a great, you know, regional paper. But you know, we still punched above our weight and we're really proud of doing so for a long time.
Sure.
I love covering local sports. You know, I loved high school sports. That was probably my favorite, part about, you know, being a sports writer just because of the access and the stories and just being there. So yeah, when the Free Press started and I was starting to kind of hear about it, you know, get wind of it, see some things online, I asked around and a couple people that, you know, I do know and trust were involved with it. Phil Jenkins and Taft Coghill Jr., who wrote with me at the Freelance Star, were involved in, I think, an advisory capacity pre-launch. So I said, let's try this. And it was a huge risk, but also at the same time, like, so is staying at the Freelance Star when I had been, you know, forced to take unpaid furloughs for 2 years in a row, you know, for several weeks. And I'm really glad I did because it took me out of my comfort zone, but it has really, you know, broadened my perspective as a journalist.
What was it like? Because I just, especially in the early days, and just, you know, the startup, everything's new, and you're just trying to establish yourself.
So yeah, it's trying to figure out like who we are and what we're
who
doing.
Who we are, yeah.
Literally building systems from the ground up, you know, deciding what we're going to cover, deciding what kinds of stories appeal to us. We noticed off the jump that one of the biggest gaps or voids in the market was like local government coverage. Really fundamental things like city council in the city, boards of supervisors in the county, school board. You know, things like when the real estate tax rate is being discussed or when a big, you know, residential development or a data mm-hmm. center is being discussed. So that was a pretty obvious, like, starting point to just, you know, before you can get into accountability or, you know, some of these really second order journalism type things, you got to have awareness. Awareness has to come first. So we really just set about trying to be places, trying to cover these things. And, you know, it was a learning experience and there are a lot of missteps and there's still some missteps and I'm not going to say that, you know, we've done a perfect job, but, I think we've been able to build some trust with some of the different stories we've written. I think we've been able to build some trust by just sort of the consistency at providing that information and doing it free, doing it timely, doing it in a variety of ways. You know, our main vehicle is a daily newsletter, right? That drops into your inbox at 5 a.m. every morning. But also, you know, all of our stories are on our website at FredericksburgFreePress.com 24/7. So yeah, it was really just like building it up from ground level.
And now we've got what, 3 different newsletters going on, and it started with the main one, and then every year I hope to add a newsletter. So then the first one was BizBeat with Bill Freeling.
Bill Freeling, yeah.
And then that was 2024. In 2025, we added Free Time with the Free Press that Kathy Dotz does a tremendous job with arts and entertainment, and that's been so much fun. And this year, there will be another one, which will be a surprise.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Not telling you.
We're looking to broaden our offerings, and you know, I'll give you another example of a gap being filled with BizBeat and what Bill does. Literally just things like real estate transfers and project applications. You know, they're bullet points, right, in a story, but they're just stuff that's information that wasn't getting pushed out to the public previously before he started doing that newsletter. And I can't tell you how many readers have just emailed in being like, you know, I look forward to this every week. Like, I check this newsletter every week. Like, it's great to see what's coming in. So I think we're just trying to constantly identify needs and fill them.
No, especially what he does, because, you know, you see something being built and you wonder what's going over there. You know, what's off of Route 3? What's being built there? And or what business is going in? And you can often find out that kind of thing.
Well, you asked about like the learning process. The other thing for me is coming from sports, like what do people care about outside of sports, right? Because like I didn't know who our mayor was in the city or like who my city councilor was. Like,
you know.
Oh, I mean, I certainly do now. But like people get really animated basically anytime, you know, about development, anytime a project is proposed, whether it's a large residential project, whether it's an industrial project like a data center, land use gets butts in the seats, you know, like that's what animates people.
Yeah.
So that's something that, you know, we've identified that and we're like, okay, we want to keep people up to date. We want to keep people apprised on like land use, developments. And you know, I think that's just huge, just listening. So I'll give you another example of listening. When we did those candidate forums, we sort of crowdsourced all of our questions and topics for the candidates from the community. We put out a questionnaire. We solicited answers, questions and topics on social media. So we really wanted it to be not like we're the free press dictating like the questions that are being asked on stage. It's like, no, we're your conduit, right? Like we're just the messenger through which you can try to, you know, ask the people vying to represent you what you want to ask them.
Joey LaMonaco is the managing editor of the Fredericksburg Free Press. Mitzi Brown is on the board. We're talking about the Free Press this morning and also a fundraiser that is coming up on the Thursday, March the 19th. All the details at FredericksburgFreePress.com. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's now 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff with the Fredericksburg Free Press this morning. Joey LaMonaco, the managing editor here. Mitzi Brown is on the board. She is here this morning. FredericksburgFreePress.com. If you have never checked it out, because all kinds of, and as Joey mentioned, all area localities are covered in when things are happening. FredericksburgFreePress.com. Also, if you go to that site, Mitzi, you'll see about the Laugh Out Loud Local event that is coming up on the
19th. Laugh Out Local. Mm-hmm.
And you can get tickets.
Yeah, you can get tickets there. It's going to be hilarious. It's going to be a great night. It'll be very different than what you're used to doing. And I'm glad because I like the date of it because it's, you know, when nothing's been happening, you haven't had a holiday party in forever. The weather's still sort of in.
What's the date again?
March 19th.
Okay.
And doors open at 7:30. There's going to be a raffle. They're going to do crazy kind of offshoot things we're going to do there. It's going to be a fun night.
Does he need an opener? I feel like I could do a five-minute set. I could do 10 minutes. I could write some jokes.
Hey, talk to Ramin. I'll send you his contact.
You could do that.
Yeah. That would be fun.
I could see that.
That would be fun.
I could see that.
Bill Freeling's going to introduce
at
the
my
event.
Own, at my own peril. But
I dare you to do it. I actually dare you to do it.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. It's a work event and my best material. I'm not sure I want to unveil that in front of the board for the free for half joking. But
we'll be drinking. It'll be all right.
So Bill Freeling is going to introduce?
He's just introducing the event.
Okay.
And then, yes, I would love like a five-minute opener. Feel free. I'll give you Ramin's contact info. I'm sure he'd love it.
So, chance to Joey for a few minutes at least to brag. Are there stories or are there things you've covered? You've talked about campaigning and elections, but just kind of the day to day.
There's one thing that I really want to call to your audience's attention, and it's something that we publish each Monday, and it is like something that I think is pretty unique and pretty singular, at least in this region. We call it On the Agenda, and it is just a comprehensive digest of every public meeting in the Fredericksburg region.
I love it.
And we distill it down into bullet points. Here are the main things that are going to be talked about. And then we have a section called Get the Memo.
I love the Get
where
the Memo.
I really encourage our reporters to, you know, call a city councilor or call a board of supervisors member and be like, hey, this was my take. I read the agenda. This is what I thought. Like, am I missing anything? Like, what do you think is going to be like the big conversation? And it's just sort of like an insider type, you know, paragraph or two about what to expect. So, you know, if you can't go to a meeting or if you can't even stream it, you know, we were talking about streaming it online, which is, you know, wild that you can do that now.
Right.
You can go to On the Agenda and you could be like, oh, well, you know, I did want to talk about this. This is, you know, going to be built in my neighborhood. I do want to speak during public comment. It empowers you to be able to, you know, engage civically. So that's something that I'm really proud of. And it's like, it is an example of a pivot because that's not sexy journalism. Like, I'm like, you know, an old school, like verbal artistry type, like journalist, right? You know, overwrought prose. And this is not that. This is just like nuts and bolts public service journalism. But I'm really proud of that.
Oh, it helps me. Every Monday morning, I go over that and I look. Okay, this is, you know, I need to watch, you know, look for this, or you know watch this, or you know it. I use it as an agenda for myself.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Summaries. I love the summaries.
Yeah,
because it takes a lot. You know, people work for a living. They have families. They have lives, and the ability to just take a real quick paragraph and go, "This is important to me," rather than having to log on, read the agenda, and go through the whole.
Well, right,
packet.
And agendas
are hard to understand.
As a rule, yeah, they're not the most accessible documents.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, there are attachments. So, like, what we can do, because we have been as journalists following some of these stories, you know, in the past, and have a little bit of the background, is we can click on those attachments, be like, oh, this is what this is about. You know, this thing had an initial hearing, you know, a month ago, and this is when they're going to vote on it. Or, you know, this thing, you know, got shot back, you know, tabled, you know, now they're redoing it and bringing it back for consideration. So I am really proud about that. I'm really proud, you know, some of the, you know, we have some big news coming soon about, you know, how some of our journalism from the past year stacked up. You know, just off the top of my head, a story that really resonated with me was Taft Coghill Jr. He's a Caroline kid, right? Chances are, if you go to Caroline and you ask about Taft, like, people would be like, oh yeah, he's my cousin.
Right.
That's just how it works down there. But he was able to, you know, find out this group of, I think it was six people who integrated what was then Bowling Green High School in 1967, I want to say, and then also two siblings who integrated the elementary school the same year. And, you know, you talk about, you know, Brown versus Board of Education, you talk about, you know, integration in Virginia, but that's one of those stories that was never told until, you know, he sat down with them and asked them what it was like. And what struck me about that story was it wasn't a one-size-fits-all experience. Like, each of them had different trials and tribulations. Some of them had, you know, white teachers who were allies who helped them. Some of them didn't. Some of them had white teachers who were, you know, words I can't use on the radio.
Openly hostile.
That's a great way to describe it, Mitzi.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's a story that stuck with me, and it's a story that had what we describe as impact in journalism. So, you know, something happens as a result of your reporting. Delegate Nicole Cole introduced, I believe, like a resolution or a commemoration about those eight individuals who integrated the school. So anytime we write a story and it has what we describe as impact, you know, something comes out of it, whether that's a micro impact, like a reader, you know, just reaching out to you being like, hey, I never knew about this. Thank you for broadening my perspective. You know, that's an impact. You know, it's one person. It's a micro level. Or you have something, you know, structural, like, you know, so, you know, a commemoration gets introduced in the House of Delegates. So stories like that, one that I did personally, I spent some time with three people in the city school system. They're family liaisons for what is a really, really substantial Afghan community in the city. and I shadowed them, and I saw how they interacted with the kids on their caseload. Because one thing that I didn't grasp necessarily is it's not just a language barrier with, you know, former Afghan refugees. There's a cultural barrier too. And to have someone who understands those cultural norms, and these three people are Afghan natives themselves, and they were refugees themselves. To have someone who understands that and has gone through that journey really makes acclimatizing easier, and it really helps those kids have better outcomes. So I wrote that story, and it was really cool for me to get to learn, you know, some of the Dari words and try to include some of that language in there. And I'm really proud that, you know, I think that that story engendered some trust, and it's led to some other reporting opportunities. And that's always a good sign, right? When you report on something and then people keep asking you to come back and do more stories about their community.
They trust you.
Yeah.
I have to say, I think the best thing the board did was hire the three people that we hired at Jump. Mm-hmm. They are really, really talented people, and they have a fire in their belly for what they're doing. They give a damn about the community on such a deep, deep level, and they're devoted to getting this job done right, and couldn't have asked for more. One of the things I'm most proud of for Joey is the tribe. That has been amazing.
So that's an interesting story, because you've done a great job of telling it, because there are a lot of facets to it, and it's hard to hard to know.
Well, explain
who to trust.
So how much time you got, Ted? But anyway, you know, I did not know much about the Potawatomi Indian tribe. In fact, I could not have told you, you know, prior to the Free Press launching, that there was a state recognized Indian tribe in Stafford County. And then I got an email from these two historians, Rick and Geraldine McGregor. And it was just a really long email. Honestly, it was too long. But it piqued my interest, and it led to this sort of winding story that it kind of took over my life for a while, and in some ways continues to do so, about what identity is, because the Potawatomi Indian tribe is located largely in White Oak, which is an area in southern Stafford County. And what you have essentially is two historians questioning their narrative, questioning whether or not they are truly, you know, indigenous people. And they've leveled some really, you know, I would say serious allegations about it, about their identity. And for me, it's really just been about trying to unravel what's actually going on and what's led to it. So I started with talking to Rick and Geraldine, who are characters in and of themselves. Obviously, I talked to several people involved with the tribe. You know, it's led me to scour academic text. I've spent a lot of time in the Virginiana room in the bottom of the Rappahannock Library looking at oral histories and stuff like that, things I never thought I would do. But, you know, just this whole question of what is history and who gets to tell it was really what drew me. And you know, I'm really proud that that series has been recognized, you know, by a couple of, you know, different media organizations. It was a finalist for the Institute for Nonprofit News' Explanatory Journalism Award. And it was another learning experience for me in that I've never told a story in the podcast medium. And doing that is very different. You know, writing something that needs to be read aloud and needs to sound good, you know, with your voice, and needs to sound good as spoken word is very different than writing as a story. And I quickly found that the way I write for print and online doesn't necessarily always translate. So there's been a lot of really fun, you know, learning experiences trying to write a podcast too.
Oh, yeah. It's
and I think, totally, you know, different. I think it's NPR quality level podcast. I mean, it is so good. So I encourage everybody to go on the website and
it's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. You can find an archive of the entire feed on FredericksburgFreePress.com on our podcast page. And one real quick plug about it. Another thing that I'm really proud about the tribe, you talk about transparency and due diligence. We have an entire supplemental page. We have a Google document full of original documents, full of citations, full of interview notes. So you can really see, you can really go beyond the reporting and see kind of what we were delving into. You can see some photographs we've taken while we were, you know, on site reporting. So I do encourage you, in addition to listening to the podcast, of which there are six episodes at the moment, there'll probably be eight or nine to finish off the series here. I would go and look at those extra resources, because that was, you know, a component of the reporting as well.
This is what a nonprofit newsroom can do.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for you, Joey, in having been at the Freelance Star and just the, you know, the changing face of journalism in all communities, this gives you and in others there at the Free Press the chance to continue doing something you love.
It does, and it does so without the specter, like the looming, you know, specter of job loss or layoffs. Because, God, I've seen so many. It's just like it got to the point where you were deadened to it, you know, like you were almost like, when the next person got laid off, like you almost expected it. You shouldn't be that way, right? Like, it should affect you when someone gets laid off. You know, when my boss, Steve DeShazo, the sports editor, longtime sports editor, got laid off, I was like, damn, but like also expected, right? And at the Free Press, there's none of that, right? Like we understand that it is a constant pivot. That's why we're doing Laugh Out Loud. That's why we're doing fundraisers. Mm-hmm. That's why we are, you know, the board is going crazy trying to, you know, get big dollars, small dollars, medium dollars. It's why we apply to grants. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, we're sustainable, and we're also not beholden to clicks. We're not having to post things about cute puppies to try to get fractional ad dollars off of Facebook. Right. So that's another benefit.
Right. Yeah, there's that. And I also just want to add that we're very excited. We just hired a photojournalist, Jeff Carney, who is, in my opinion, the very best photographer for miles and miles and miles. And he's a very talented guy, and we're lucky to have him.
So we're looking forward to centering visual journalism in a way that this region hasn't had since the heydays of the Freelance Star. Really, really historically great photojournalism at the Freelance Star. And you can talk about, you know, even just in my time, shooters like Dave Ellis and Bob Martin, Suzanne Carrossi, Mike Moronis. And Jeff is of that caliber. And in our own way, in our very, you know, unique FFP way, we're going to find a way to tell the region's stories through the medium of visual journalism. Right. And Jeff's going to make that happen.
We're starting that now. I mean, when I talk pivoting, that's what I mean. I mean, so much of it is Instagram. So much of it is visual now.
Right.
More than the written word or at least equal to. And so that's, again, pivoting to the ability to, okay, this is what people want. We're going to find a way to do it.
Well, and it's so important, and that's, you know, kind of behind what happened to the Free Press getting started. Of just, it's important that this area has, like you said, a reliable news source.
Trustworthy. I mean, just because you know, one of the graphics on the thing is this, I saw it on Facebook. It's not a news source. You know, it's got to be reliable. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, but for the, when the newspaper dies, when the main newspaper dies, that's all that's left, and we had to do something.
And to play devil's advocate a little bit, we're trying to meet our audience where they're at.
That's right.
And that's been part of my learning curve too, is realizing that there's a lot of people in this region that are never going to go to Fredericksburg Free Press and spend 7 minutes reading, you know, a piece of verbal artistry that one of us has written. They might not, you know, even click into a newsletter online. So we're trying to find ways to distill stories into short form video on Reels, on TikTok, and have those standards, you know, have those journalistic standards upheld, but meet people where they're at. Mm-hmm. Because that's part of serving your demographic, is we're not just serving the people who have been traditionally served that'll read, you know, sit down over the breakfast table, spread out two newspaper broadsheets and read the whole thing. We need to inform everyone. So a lot of our efforts have been, you know, just that realization, that epiphany that, hey, we need to change our habits to match what news consumption is.
Yeah, we need to do it all. You know, it's not the other, but everything is in addition to.
Right.
Right. Yeah. No, that is one of the things I noticed with a lot of online things. A lot of times you'll not having an editor or parameters to put a story. Sometimes a story will just keep going and going, and I'll even lose interest.
Right. Yeah.
And you're interested.
And I'm interested. Yeah.
You know, and I'm 35, but, you know, I'm essentially, you know, very regressive, or, you know, a media dinosaur. So for me, it is not, you know, I'm not a digital native in the sense that, you know, Gen Alpha kids are. And one thing that I try to stay really up to date on is just how those younger generations are getting their news. A lot of times it is, you know, group chats, links being shared in group chats among trusted friends. Mm-hmm. You know, it is news influencers. So certain personalities who deliver news, and there are various qualities, right? There's some that are really good and really good journalists, and there's some that, you know, aren't. So I think the bottom line is when you try to reach people, authenticity sort of equals credibility. So you're not trying to sound like Walter Cronkite, you know, when you're doing a podcast, you know.
Right.
I'm trying to sound like Joey LaMonaco explaining it to Ted Schubel in the FredericksburgFreePress.com studios.
that's been a great thing to see you when I said that. I don't think you know this.
Oh, I love it. I smiled. It was involuntary.
Yeah. Quick break. We're going to wrap this up this morning. Good stuff this morning with Joey LaMonaco and Mitzi Brown, the Fredericksburg Free Press, FredericksburgFreePress.com. Check it out if you haven't. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
We are talking Fredericksburg Free Press this morning. Joey LaMonaco and Mitzi Brown in this morning, FredericksburgFreePress.com. Again, Mitzi, the event itself, the fundraising event on Thursday the 19th at 7:30 at the Griffin on Charles. And get your tickets.
Get your tickets.
Support good journalism.
And they're flying, so if you want to have a great time, you want to see a really funny guy, get your tickets now.
One of the things that I saw recently and real quick, describe the paper of record. That's kind of a big deal because
that
that's always
a big deal.
That's been a thing that up until now had always been a newspaper kind
Virginia
of thing.
Virginia was the very first state to allow digital only news sources to become a paper of record, but the standard is even higher than it is for paper for regular paper papers. So you have to meet a certain criteria and you have to prove it. So it took about a year to get it done. We had to get everything together, third-party audits, all kinds of stuff to prove that we are what we claim to be. And then it has to go through the courts. And so each of the five circuit courts in our localities all granted the order allowing us to become a paper of record, which allows us to do public notices at a far cheaper rate than what the localities have been paying. And it's also because we're digital. It's unlimited space, so you don't have to speak cryptically to get it to be able to afford to put something in. And frequency. So if you've got to do it one time or five times, it's the same rate. It doesn't matter. So you pay $150, and that's it. That's all you ever have to pay. And that just covers our costs. So we can do it as a public service rather than as a profit center.
I guess the big stories right now that you're dealing with that we're all watching are data centers and budgets this time of year.
Yeah, so we are in the throes of budget season where real estate tax rates are going to be set. We're also kind of monitoring a lot of stuff. So you talk about data centers. The General Assembly session and various, you know, bills that could affect data center development are something that we're trying to keep tabs on and see what kind of local ramifications they might have. One of which is the rate classes for data centers from an electric standpoint. Another one is tax breaks that data center developments get at the state level. And you're seeing it very much be a touch point. You know, as boards change over, right? There's an election in November.
Yeah.
New people, you know, take seats in January. You're seeing decisions sort of redone or undone in some of these localities. Concerning, you know, whether data center developments need a special use permit. You've seen discussions about raising or not raising there's a property tax rate that is specific to like computer equipment. So like data centers pay a lot with that. So you've seen discussions about whether to raise that. So I think it's not going away. And you're seeing and you saw our lead story in the Free Press Daily Newsletter today was about a proposed transmission line that's going to run from Orange County through part of Spotsylvania County. Mm-hmm. And that Board of Supervisors pretty united opposition to that transmission line. And what is driving transmission lines largely is data center development. So a lot of it's really interconnected. It's a lot to cover, Ted.
Oh, you're telling me. There's a lot going on. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for the staff there that puts it all together. And it's free. FredericksburgFreePress.com. FredericksburgFreePress.com. Mitzi Brown, Joey LaMonaco. Thank you both.
Thank you. This was fun.
We'll do this again sometime.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Good to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.